Hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm very excited to introduce you guys to a really revolutionary brand new technology. We are going to interview Yehiel Tal. He's the Chief Executive Officer of CollPlant. And this is a pioneering biotech company. They specialize in regenerative medicine and 3D bioprinting technology. So he has a strong background in innovation and leadership. And they are developing plant-based recombinant human collagen and cutting-edge solutions to tissue engineering and organ printing. And this is a really cutting-edge field. We are going to learn today about these new initiatives he's driving in aesthetics, orthopedics, and 3D bioprinting applications. He brings years of engineering to this experience, and I'm so excited to learn about plant-based, you know, human recombinant collagen and potentially the implants and things that you're creating. So welcome, Yehiel, to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. So tell us a little bit about your background. Are you an engineer by training? How did you get into the medical aspect of engineering?
Yeah, my background in training is mechanical engineering. My degrees are in mechanical engineering from the Technion in Israel, which is the technological institute. And then I worked 17 years in the semiconductor area. I was stationed part of the time in the Bay Area, in Silicon Valley. And then in the year 2004, I founded my first company in the field of regenerative medicine, which was a company that developed cartilage implants, injectable implants, for knee joint cartilage. And then 6 years later, I joined CollPlant.
And you guys have now developed a plant-based recombinant human collagen. Can you explain what is that and how many years did that take? That sounds incredible.
Yeah. So this is our platform technology. And we started to develop it in 2005. The company CollPlant started as an incubator company. It was a spin-off from the university, the Hebrew University. The idea was to produce type 1 human collagen, which is the most abundant protein in our body, in genetically engineered tobacco plants. This is supposed to replace tissue-extracted collagen, which is the most common practice until now in the market. So we basically developed a technology where we are introducing the 5 human genes that are responsible for the synthesis of the type 1 collagen into tobacco plant. And why tobacco? Because tobacco is not part of the feed and food chain. So you can grow it in the vicinity of other growings without contamination. And the other reason is that it has a large biomass. So you can satisfy consumption of the market in relatively small growing areas. And tobacco is growing very fast. It takes like, 6 weeks to 8 weeks from a small plantlet to mature plant where you will start to harvest the leaves. And for each plant, there are like 3 growing cycles. Mm-hmm. So there is a very efficient process here. And we introduce the 5 genes to the plant. In the plant level, basically, it's like in our body, in our cells in the body, the precursor of collagen is being synthesized. And then we extract it from the plant and we remove from the 2 sides of the molecule the CNN propeptides, and we stay with the core collagen, which is basically the basis for our products. This is a very complex technology and took us about 10 years to develop it till maturity. And basically, we needed to tackle 3 challenges. The first one is basically to demonstrate scalability of the production. So we did it. Second one was to show that we are cost competitive, where the standard is a tissue extracted collagen like bovine and porcine. And thirdly, to bring in clinical validation. So we went in 2010 and developed 2 products that are commercialized in Europe. And I can expand about these products later on, but this was the clinical validation of the technology.
That's incredible. So basically, the plant has become your factory for generating these precursors for collagen molecules. So once they're extracted, how do you then assemble that into collagen itself? Or does it come in that fully formed molecule?
It's a fully formed molecule. It has a perfect triple helix structure with many cell binding domains. So basically, if you compare it to collagen that is extracted from tissue like bovine or porcine or even human cadavers, the collagen that is extracted from a tissue is partially denatured. It may carry residues from the host tissue like growth factors and elicit immune response. In our case, the collagen is virgin. It has a perfect triple helix structure, many cell binding domains, and it's very uniform. So we have the monomer is perfect. It's like a human collagen. It's completely identical. And it won't elicit immune response. And it's much more biofunctional, which means that if you form a scaffold out of it, it will enable cells to proliferate much faster compared to scaffolds that are made from tissue extracted collagen because it has many more cell binding domains. And thirdly, is also the homogeneity, which enables you, if we talk about medical aesthetics, to make a dermal fibril, which is comprised of collagen and other constituent, but the rheological properties of this collagen will enable injectability in a very uniform way, in a very controlled way.
That's fascinating. Is this going to be type 1 collagen, type 3 collagen, or a normal intermixture of the
It is
combination?
type 1 collagen, which is in terms of production in plant is the most complex one because it's five genes. There are like two structural genes, col alpha 1 and col alpha 2, and three enzyme genes, P4H alpha, P4H beta, and lysine hydroxylase. And all these five are basically introduced to the plant in our technology, and they work in an orchestrated manner to synthesize the procollagen, which is the precursor of the collagen.
Wow, that's incredible. So using that technology, then you guys innovated again to develop a photocurable material. What exactly is that process?
Okay, so if we talk today about the traditional dermal fillers, most of them are hyaluronic acid based. Hyaluronic acid is a good product because it's hydrophilic, so it has a good skin lifting and can be injected easily. So, and the time between injections is like 9 to 12 months. But if you add collagen to the HA, you add also the biological activity because collagen basically the degradation products of collagen are basically attracting cells and basically over time a scaffold that is made or a dermal filler that is made from collagen and HA will be replaced gradually with a newly grown tissue. So this is adding to the skin lifting, which is HA only, also the feature of rejuvenation of the skin. And then we thought about the third generation product, which would be a photocurable filler, which will add also the ability, in addition to skin lifting and rejuvenation, to contour the injected area, which means that after the product is injected partially cross-linked on the periosteum, and then after injection, the physician can, with the fingers, sculpt the injected area, give it the desired shade, and then shine it with light from the outside. And we have a special light torch that we developed that will penetrate through the skin and basically photocure or cross-link the product in situ. And after this will happen, there is very good retention between the injected filler and the host tissue, which is good, for example, for facial expression. And the contour will stay the same way as you sculpted it. It will not change. So you can make out of it not only dermal fillers, but also, for example, chin implants.
So you can take it comes as a liquid consistency like a gel, and it's placed, it's molded. I understand it has moldability for like up to 24,
Yes.
48 hours or 72 hours. And so.
The photocuring is very fast, which means that after injection and sculpting, you just shine it with light for 1 to 2 minutes, and then it will solidify and it becomes like a gummy bear stiffness. And the nice thing about the product is if you compare it, for example, to commercial products like Juvederm or Voluma, the ratio between what G prime, and I will explain in a minute to the audience what is the G prime, to the injection force is much, much improved, which means that G prime is reflecting the elastic behavior of a material when it's being deformed. It's also called elastic modulus. You can translate it, for example, to the stiffness of the feeler and the coercivity of the feeler. So with the same force as you inject the commercial feelers like Voluma and Juvederm, you achieve a higher G prime, which means you have a better skin lifting. The skin lifting capacity is better. This is why if you map the sweet spots of the product across the face, you'll see that the best is injection into the periosteum, which is the deeper layer. Okay, yep. So this will enable very efficient lifting of the soft tissue.
That's incredible. So you envision a product that could be used for lines like nasolabial folds, but can also be used to mold a chin, a jawline angle, or someday I could use, you know, in my famous, I do a Tinkerbell tip lift liquid rhinoplasty. I could fill a hump and photo cure the hump and have a really smooth long-term profile change. That's crazy.
Yeah, you can assemble a roadmap with this kind of technology, which, by the way, we borrowed the concept from 3D bioprinting of tissues and organs that I can expand later about when we talk about the breast implant, the regenerative breast implant. But this technology was borrowed from the 3D printing, and it opens to us the ability to create a roadmap of products, not only for the face, but also for other parts of the body. And the key difference will be, of course, the contouring ability.
So do you see these light-activated photocurable fillers as definitely taking over and potentially replacing other short-term fillers because longevity, adaptability?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is the future. You can also, if you want, to use some imagination, you can think about, for example, embedding in the product also small microcarriers that will do a sustained release of biofunctional molecules into the injected area. Mm-hmm. So there are many options here.
How far along are you guys in your testing process? Has this been, you know, tested for safety and efficacy in vitro?
So we basically tested. We have assembled a complete preclinical package, and now we are planning to initiate the clinical trial. I cannot say yet something about the date. As I mentioned earlier, we are a public company, so we cannot elaborate more than what is elaborated to the public. But the plan is that after we compile the preclinical package, to move towards a clinical studies that probably will be, first of all, a pilot study, like 20 to 30 patients, and later on, a pivotal studies that will follow with the desired number of subjects.
And then let's talk a little bit about using the 3D bioprinting concept. What currently is available out there for 3D bioprinting in terms of organs or human use products?
I first of all, I will start with the need. You know, let's talk about life-saving organs. In the U.S., there are about 30,000 organs transplanted annually, and there is a waiting list of about 120,000, and about 1 million people are dying from organ impairment. So this indicates that there is a very, very big gap between the need and the availability. And in order to close the gap, you need the technological building blocks that will enable you to make unlimited supply of organs for transplantation. Mm-hmm. So this was the immediate need. We expanded it into other areas because 3D bioprinting, I would say that there are like five different market segments that I can count. The first one is tissue models, tissue and organ models. So you can, with these models, to develop a drug. So it's good for drug discovery or personalized medicine. The second segment is breeding of scaffolds of all kinds, like, for example, for bone fractures, for torn tendons, things like that. The third area is breeding of tissues, like we develop a breast tissue. So we are, this is the third segment. The fourth one is breeding of organoids or endocrine glands, like pancreas, thyroid gland. And the most complex one, and which requires a lot of investment, is life-saving organs like kidney, liver, lungs, and heart. So this is, if you look and you break down the market potential, it's enormous. It's a huge market potential. And today I can say that the technological building blocks that will enable us to satisfy this need are almost mature. So this is one thing. The second thing is that the technology of 3D bioprinting is coming from additive manufacturing, which is usually printing of polymers of all kinds. Using the same technology with some, of course, adaptations, we converted the printers to bioprinters. And the ink that is used in these printers is based on constituents like our collagen, which is the major constituent. But it's not enough to use the collagen, because if you want to print a scaffold, you need to mimic the physical properties of the target tissue or target organ. And in order to achieve it, you need to add polymers, which are biodegradable polymers. And these polymers will add, first of all, the physical properties to the construct. And this way you can dial exactly the physical properties according to the target tissue or target organ. And it will also dictate the degradation kinetics, because in regenerative medicine, when you form a new tissue, the scaffold should degrade in a synchronized manner to the growth of the new tissue. Mm-hmm. Should not be too slow, should not be too fast. So combination of collagen and polymers basically enable us to form bioink formulations, which are indication specific. Mm-hmm. So for example, to print a breast, you need a specific formulation, but the common denominator is that the collagen is that is used is undergoing some chemical modification. So in the presence of light, it will cross-link. This is the common denominator. And then in printing, you have also different printing technologies, and you need to adapt to the right printing technology. You have extrusion printing, you have stereolithography, you have laser, you have inkjet, you have two-photon lithography. We are using, for example, stereolithography for the breast implant. This is the technologies that we selected, but we, at the same time, also sell our biological inks to customers that are using the different technologies for the printing. So this is the background.
This is so fascinating. So you're able to load in all of these polymers and collagen blends, and then the 3D printer three-dimensionally creates the structure and scaffold of the various organs or, you know, the tissue that you're planning. And then that, when implanted into the human body, are we at that phase where stem cells, mesenchymal stem cells, will come in to the scaffolding and find a home and bring fibroblasts in and then, you know, take up house and recreate an actual functional organ? Or is it going to become more of a mound of capsule scar tissue like fibrosis?
Actually, it will not cause capsule or scar tissue. It has very good biocompatibility with the host tissue. All the studies that we did, by the way, we started with rodents, then with rabbits, and then we went to large animal studies. We did over 100 species.
Wow.
In total of number of subjects, but different species. In order to ensure that the implant is well designed in terms of geometry, in terms of formulation, and of course in terms of performance, so it will be able to recruit cells from the surrounding tissue. The cells will infiltrate. By the way, the growth rate of the newly formed tissue is amazing. It's about 1 centimeter per month.
Wow.
And if you look on an implant, like, you know, a 300cc implant, the height of the implant is about 4 to 5 centimeters, or about 2 inches. This implant will be populated with a newly formed tissue before the scaffold will degrade, because the scaffold is like a lattice. So pores in the scaffold will be filled with a new tissue and the vascularization at the same time, because vascularization is mandatory for the survival of the cells.
That's incredible. So you at some point, do you envision silicone breast implants to be a thing of the past? Like, you're developing a breast implant tissue that's going to be able to come in and behave like an autologous breast tissue, it sounds like.
That is correct. And the nice thing about the 3D printing is that we can dial in the required stiffness of the implant.
Right.
We can do it similar to silicone implants. We can make it softer if we want. This is a very dynamic process because you start with a certain stiffness, which is the stiffness of the scaffolds that you are fabricating. And within a short time, the newly grown tissue is adding stiffness to the scaffold. And then the scaffold will degrade and the stiffness will be reduced again. Mm-hmm. So this is like a dynamic situation. Eventually, you want to end the process with a fat tissue, which is basically in the desired geometry, which is the same geometry as you have for the implant.
Mm. So Yehiel, tell me, how does CollPlant's technology kind of take away some of these issues that we see as complications with current modern day implants that patients have problems with?
Okay, so first of all, let's start with the collagen. The collagen that we are using is fully characterized. Need to mention also that we are also, this is in the public domain, that we are partners with AbbVie, so the collagen that is being used is well characterized, not only in terms of safety of biocompatibility, but also immunogenicity. So it won't elicit things. This is a very important advantage of our collagen versus any other type of collagen that you can find in the market. So this is one thing. The second thing is that we are selecting for the polymers that are medical grades, that are well proven, that will break down. Of these polymers, after the degradation of the scaffold, will be the breakdown residues, so the components will be evacuated either through the kidney or through the liver and won't elicit any immune response.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that we are continuously testing in our animal studies and also in ex vivo studies. And until now, we are having all the information that is supporting our implant composition that is proven not to elicit a neural response. So I think that this is one advantage over the silicone implants. The second thing is we don't form a capsule around the implant.
And why is that? Is that just because of the chemical composition of the collagen is, you know, it's unique to blending in with the surrounding tissues and collagens?
Yeah, you can see that there is a very good attachment of the scaffold to the surrounding tissue, which takes place in a very short time. And then you see that vascularization will take place. What you need to make sure, and this is very important, that the implant will not migrate. So we developed also a way to anchor the implant after it's being administered, to anchor it so it won't, you know, migrate. And this will enable also very good integration between the host tissue and the implant itself.
So there's some kind of latching attachment system to the chest wall. Very interesting. So this kind of helps solve the problem that some patients have where they have autoimmune triggers from the silicone or the plastics. And do you envision this to be the next generation of what breast implants and what they should be? So
absolutely. Absolutely. I think the market needs it. I'm sure that most of the people that listen to this podcast realize the fact that FDA, I think it was in 2019, had a box warning about silicone implants, mostly the textured implants that may, cause ALCL, anaplastic large cell lymphoma. I think it's for us, it's an opportunity to come up with a regenerative implant that is forming a new tissue, basically without using any growth factors or any cells that are coming from a donor. Everything is done by the patient. Like the body is the bioreactor.
Are there any dangers to this process? Like how does the body know specifically to turn off production instead of continuously multiplying, dividing, and, you know, like cancer cells do? Like how do the cells know when to turn off?
Okay, that's a good question. First of all, our target population in the first place will be augmentation and not, reconstruction patients.
Mm-hmm.
Because reconstruction patients, of course, are went through mastectomy, or lumpectomy. And, from what we learned, we are developing continuously the mode of action of the product is we don't see how a cancer tissue can be developed using our implant.
I mean, that sounds wonderful. I'm just curious, even for normal tissue, I mean, women want to be a certain size. They don't want to continue to grow, grow, grow.
Oh no,
So when the
this is
polymer
another
dissolves, the growth will stop.
No, this is another question. What we see for sure is that the implant, when it's being degraded, it's being replaced with a newly formed tissue, which is exactly the shape of the implant,
Right.
going and exceeding the boundary of the implant. The tissue is in the same geometry as the implant.
Interesting. And then it just knows when to turn off.
Exactly.
And then are there concerns about capsules or contractures that we see in other breast implants currently?
We don't see it, but of course we always we monitor in all the studies that we did so far in large animals like all kind of pigs or ovine, we could not see the phenomena of capsules, but again we need of course to continue the studies. We are planning a clinical trial only after we will assemble clinical preclinical package, and after going through the safety and biocompatibility. Until now we focused on the development of the formulation, the design of the implant, the surgical technique. By the way, one of the challenges that we needed to tackle was administration to a very small incision, like in the silicone implants. So the incision size that we can, for example, administrate an implant of 300 cc is 2 inches only. It's quite impressive how the implant can be folded. And other things that we managed to achieve is the mechanical properties of the implant. We are using modeling and simulation techniques that are based on finite element analysis, and we are able to mimic the implant behavior in the body in different loading conditions. For example, a woman that is running or jumping on plane or getting hit by a soccer ball or just slipping, we can mimic all the situations, dynamic loading, static loading, and this way we optimize the implant design so we eliminate fatigue points. And this is something that is very important when you do the submission to animal studies to also to present this modeling and simulation.
I think that's fascinating. I'm curious how you think that this next generation of bioregenerative products is going to change aesthetics and plastic surgery in this industry.
I think that if we talk about products like the photocurable filler, I think I mentioned earlier that we can form a roadmap of products because if we look on the life cycle of the current products, the life cycle is in the decline stage. You see less and less sales of some of the companies, and there is a need for new products. And the news that we are bringing to the market is the rejuvenation as well as the contouring ability. I think this is something new. Another thing is that we can use the photocurable filler as a delivery vehicle. For example, if you want to do a sustained release of Botox to increase the half-life, you can do that with this product. You can inject photocure and then you can do the sustained release through microcarriers that will be embedded in the product.
Wow, and they'll slowly be continuously released into the
Exactly.
muscle tissues. Interesting.
Right. And then talking about regenerative chin implant, for example, you can basically do the chin in two ways. You can inject and photocure after sculpting, or alternatively, you can print a chin implant from collagen and polymers, and you can administer it similar to the ways that it's being done today with silicone implants. But it will be a regenerative implant. So this is another area that we can develop.
Zygomatic, mandibular implants, temples, cheek,
Exactly.
jaw, and there's so many applications potentially. How about for in orthopedics and with reconstructive patients?
Okay, so orthopedics could be, for example, tendons, ligaments, could be cartilage, meniscus, many things that can be done using the same technology. of 3D bioprinting.
Are there some early adopters out there already using some of this biotechnology, or is this all in the very early stages, just research stages at the moment?
I think that the center of gravity of the market is now in the academia, research institutes. You start to see some trend into commercialization, like us. You know, we are, to some extent, we are writing the book here. Mm-hmm. You don't find too many companies that are doing, regenerative medicine products using 3D bioprinting. By the way, I can mention here one another example, which is United Therapeutics, which is a U.S. company. They are doing, organ transplants like lungs in 3D printing.
Amazing.
So you see trend in medical aesthetics. I think, as far as I know, that we are one of the very few companies that are doing regenerative implants using 3D bioprinting.
Currently, we do have some autologous substitutes like, cadaveric donor skin,
yes,
or donor fat, donor products. What would be advantages of the plant-based human recombinant technology?
I would say that there are several advantages. The first one I mentioned earlier is biofunctionality, because it has a perfect tripalmitic structure and cell binding domain. So you'll see that if you compare a scaffold that is made from our collagen to scaffold that is made from tissue extracted collagen, you'll see that in our scaffold, much faster cell proliferation, which translates into faster tissue healing. Okay, so this is one thing. The second thing is the homogeneity. It's very important to maintain homogeneous formulations, either a dermal filler or if you want to use it as a bioink for 3D bioprinting. Biological properties like viscosity should be very well controlled. And we can achieve it with our collagen, and we can make out of it scaffolds that are having distinguished physical properties, like, for example, compression resistance, tensile strength, and of course, as I said, biological properties. Thirdly, safety profile. Safety profile, our collagen will not elicit immune response and no allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a significant differentiator, because collagen that is coming from a cross-linked tissue is not only partially denatured and has much less cell binding domains, it also may elicit immune response because it carries residues from the host tissue.
Yes, in the 80s when they came out with the injectable collagen that we had here in the States, that was a big thing. We had to do test doses and make sure people didn't have sensitivities. So that eliminates the need for that. What about the concept that, the skin is so, in terms of skin, it's very multidimensional. There's elastin, there's multiple different collagens, there's, 95 different collagen type molecules there. Do we need to worry about having just collagen type 1? Are you working on bringing in other components of natural dermis and skin?
Okay, so first of all, I always joke that we have a slogan in the company, tobacco that heals.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually tobacco is associated with, bad things like smoking.
Yes.
You can treat smoking damage, either I mentioned lung printing by United Therapeutics, or alternatively making skincare products like we do the dermal fillers, and it can also be used in other applications like skincare. Going back to your question, if you want to print the skin, it's doable. There are a few academias that are doing it. Usually combination of collagen and elastin is better, because it will give you also the elasticity of the skin. Also can be applicable for tendons, which require elasticity. Doing it from collagen alone is not going to be sufficient, in my view, because you need to mimic the physical properties of the skin tissue. And by the way, another use is the tissue model that is mimicking skin tissue. So you print skin tissue on a chip, and you can basically test the impact of different drugs on this printed scaffold. You can basically print the scaffold and then seed it with patient cells, and then you create a tissue which mimics the skin of the patient. This is emerging technology, and it's good for drug discovery or alternatively for optimizing or personalized treatment for the patient. It could be different skincare products and the impact on the skin, or the treatment of skin cancer.
So the day is coming when I can send you a skin biopsy from a patient or from myself, and hopefully it can be
correct.
Incorporated into a 3D skin model, and then the secretome or the products that are emitted from that could be a topical skincare or even my own personalized injectable.
That is absolutely correct. You send us a skin sample. We extract the cells from the skin sample. We see the scaffold that we are printing. Then we create an array which is comprised of many microfluidic chips. Are situated inside these chips, and basically you flow different drugs or different constituents through some channel, and basically you see the impact on the skin tissues that you form. Mm. And then you can select the right treatment for the patient.
That'll be incredible. I feel like that sounds so futuristic. When can we expect to see some of these things hitting the market? Is this in the next 5 years that we'll have photocurable implants for facial aesthetics or breast implants?
I think the short term is the dermal filler. The longer term is breast implants, which means that breast implant can take more than 5 years from now until you see them in the market. I would say 5 to 10 years, while the photocurable filler will be probably not more than 5 years.
Amazing. I love the idea of being able to inject a product, mold it, customize, you know, the shape and the appearance of it, and the patient right there can like look at themselves in the mirror, make sure they love it, and then we just photocure it, turn on the light and set it. And that's extremely innovative, because certainly technology for implants is not like that currently. You know, we have to make a medium, small, large, and it's not really customized to each patient. It's very expensive to customize implants. So I think that is going to be extremely innovative.
By the way, we take it one level more, the training bioprinting capabilities. You know, everything starts with imaging if you want to do something patient specific. So you can do the imaging of the organ, then you can convert the file into what's called STL file, which is the file that you are setting to the printer. And then the printer can use different print heads with different formulations, and you can print exactly according to the anatomy of the specific patient.
Mm.
And you can mimic exactly the structure of the organ or tissue of this patient in the 3D printing.
Wow. So you can have an MRI ahead of time, and we should all have our MRI when we're 35 years old and then preserve those images. So when we're 80, we have the ability to rebuild young shape, young size, proper format of the organs. It sounds so futuristic. Well, Yehiel, what do you think is the next iteration of regenerative aesthetics? Currently in regenerative aesthetics, we have some new things out there, like using exosomes, using polynucleotides for topical skin, microneedling, and collagen induction therapies. What are your thoughts on that? That's slightly outside of what you do, but I'm curious if you've kept up with those technologies and what do you think they do in regenerative capacity?
The things that I can envision, for example, because we were approached by several companies already, is that you can use an array of needles, very fine needles, to administrate formulations of collagen and HA into the skin in a very shallow depth in order to rejuvenate the skin. This is something that we consider also to explore. And then you can take it further to administrate not only just collagen and HA, but also some biofunctional molecules that will do some additional either therapeutic or cosmetic effect on the face.
So you think that that technology is going to be further developed as well?
I think so, yeah, definitely.
Amazing. Well, where can people find you if they're interested to find out more information about CollPlant, about plant-based human recombinant technology to build collagen, and definitely this interest in breast implants and tissues of the future?
Yeah, by the way, we are constantly being approached by various companies that are interested in, doing co-development or collaboration with respect to regenerative medicine applications. So we are completely open to it. We are looking for collaborations, either with academia or commercial companies. And the way to find me is just send me a mail. Maybe I can leave my email to you and
yeah, we can. We can put it in the show notes. Do you guys have an Instagram or a LinkedIn or a corporate
Yes.
website
Yes,
page?
we have. We have the LinkedIn page is coalplant.com, of course.
And that's Collplant, coal plant.
Yes,
Yes.
correct.
Well, you are an ingenious. I can't wait to be one of the first people to try photocurable injectable chin implants and doing a liquid rhinoplasty where you get to just shape the nose and mold the nose. I think that's going to be super fascinating. I wish you guys so much luck in this next stage of development and the clinical trials. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay, doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same as beautybydrk.com, where you can find our amazing skincare as well. That's it for now, guys. I'm bringing you all the latest and the greatest in bioregenerative therapies, wellness, and longevity. Stay tuned and listen and learn more. Love you. Stay beautiful.